Hello everyone, good afternoon. We are here live with Sheena Symington. We are very thankful, Sheena, to talk to us, and we also are with Daniela and Silvia. We are here together to interview you. We are very happy to hear about your experience, your projects, and it's a very happy opportunity for us. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Danielle and Silvia. So I ask you, Sheena, how this subject start in your life? How you start your work with this subject of EMF and EHS? If you want to talk or do the presentation, it's
sure.
Up to you.
Sure, I'll do a little bit of an intro. Excuse me, I met Dr. Magda Havas at Trent University when I was a graduate student. So she really introduced me to not only electromagnetic fields and frequencies, but naturally occurring energies. She had an energy working group that met once a month. And as a graduate student, I audited that meeting, and it was just such an eye-opening experience looking at how natural energies affect human health. And then with my master's work, I was looking at the impact of pollutants on people and plants. And then that lends itself right into looking at the impact of electromagnetic fields on plants and people as well. So I've been working with Dr. Magda Havas for many years, doing research on the biological effects of electromagnetic fields and also the healing therapies of electromagnetic fields. And recently, I'm the director of the Electrosensitive Society, where people come to get assistance, support, and help through the Electrosensitive Society when they're sensitive to these fields and frequencies. So do you want me just to go ahead and start my...
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. So you see that there?
Yeah, we are seeing.
Okay, so a lot of what I'm going to present today was also presented at the recent EMF Medical Conference held out of Arizona. And there was over 800 participants in this conference, many of which were doctors and nurses in the medical field. And you can get the information that was offered at that conference at www.emfconference2021.com. So what is EHS or EMS, electromagnetic sensitivity or electrohypersensitivity? It's referred to both. The reason why it's hypersensitive is that all of us are electromagnetically sensitive, but some of us are really debilitated in the presence of electromagnetic fields and frequencies. And those symptoms can be all sorts of things. I have a huge list here. And a lot of people say, you know, how can it affect all of those? How can it cause all of those symptoms? And really what it is, it's affecting your immune system function. So whatever your weak link is, it tends to express itself in that way. Some of the more common ones are in orange. And I'll present a little bit of information about those symptoms a little bit later in my talk. So what causes electromagnetic sensitivity? What are common precursors for EMS? And Dr. Magda Havas has come up with five precursors, and it's physical trauma to the central nervous system, so whiplash and concussion, chemical trauma through pesticides, metals, drugs, mercury, tattoos, electrical exposure, so shocks, electrocution, lightning strikes, or really severe exposure or chronic exposure or acute exposure to Wi-Fi, mobile phones, antennas. Fourth precursor is biological trauma, so if you have exposure to mold or parasites, or if you have Lyme disease. And fifth is an impaired immune system. So if you have something that is already compromising your immune system, you become much more susceptible to EMS. So at the Electrosensitive Society, I've developed or I've pointed out six different key issues with respect to those who have electromagnetic sensitivity. And one is support with the family and friends. Another is housing, finding low EMF, EMR housing. Medical help, so getting a diagnosis and more importantly, treatment for EHS or EMS. Recovery. The acronym that we refer to is it's called R-squared ID, and to reduce your exposure, reset your limbic system, boost your immune system, and then detox. physiological or psychological? People often ask if electromagnetic sensitivity is psychological or physiological, and I'll present evidence on why it is physiological. And more importantly, we advocate and accommodate those who are EHS or EMS. So first of all, support. You need the understanding from your friends and family. It's absolutely critical. No one chooses to be sensitive. It's something that they would never choose for themselves. And it can really lead to social isolation. People need to be believed and listened to and support. I've had a number of people say to me, once they feel heard, then they can really start to heal. And we need to advocate on behalf of others. Often those who are EHS or EMS can't advocate for themselves, and we need to advocate on their behalf. So one of the barriers to actually people finding support is that people often think that it's a psychological issue rather than a physiological one. So what is the evidence for a biological response? I'm going to present information on live blood analysis, heart rate variability monitoring, and plant growth in Wi-Fi. So for live blood here in the Rose Lab, we prick a finger, put it on the slide, and look at the drop of blood underneath the microscope. So this is Dr. Magda Havas's blood before Wi-Fi exposure, and this is it after Wi-Fi exposure. When she's exposed to Wi-Fi for 10 minutes, all of her blood cells actually stick together like that in the bottom. Up top, the view is the red blood cells are quite independent from each other and float around without sticking to each other. And this clodgy blood, or it's called rouleau formation. So again, Dr. Steven Sinatra says that our blood should be the consistency of red wine. And when it's in rouleau formation, it's actually the consistency of ketchup. And so what would be the ramifications for your blood being in this state? Symptoms could include headache, fatigue, dizziness, difficulty concentrating, numbness and tingling in the extremities, heart and blood pressure problems, and even heart attack or stroke. So many people who are experiencing electrosensitivity talked about having an impact on their heart. So Dr. Magda Havas started looking at the impacts on the heart. And this is a video clip from a news show called Global 16x9, and they were looking at Wi-Fi in schools. And this is a little clip of just documenting Dr. Magda Havas's research.
Well, 16x9 wanted to test the power of Wi-Fi, so we went to visit environmental scientist Magda Havas from Trent University to do another test. Professor Havas's subject, Martin, who calls himself electrically sensitive, is hooked up to a heart monitor, and Havas sets up a wireless computer.
So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be taking Martin and exposing him to microwave radiation from Wi-Fi, the same type of thing that we have in schools, for example, and just monitoring his heart to see if his heart reacts to any of the radiation. He won't know when things are turned on or off, so it's going to be a blind study in that regard.
With the Wi-Fi plugged in, Martin's heart rate accelerates in mere moments.
Now I can feel something. It's going through my chest. I feel it down my legs, too.
The closer the router is, the greater his reaction.
A few seconds ago, it was like my chest was actually jumping in the middle here.
Then, seconds after the wireless internet is unplugged, just like that, his heart rate slows down.
Martin, how are you feeling right now?
Fine, I don't think there's anything on.
But listen to this. Those levels Martin was exposed to, well, they're acceptable according to Safety Code 6. So if they're safe, why was his heart racing? Magda Havas has a theory.
So some percentage of the population is reacting to these microwave radiation at levels well below Safety Code 6.
But I'm not sick from Wi-Fi and I use it all the time.
Well, not everyone has the same sensitivities. We have children who have peanut allergies. We have people who are allergic to pollen. They react to pollen. And it's the same with electrical sensitivity. Only a percentage of the population react.
So people often ask, how many people are electromagnetically sensitive? How many people are affected? So with this environmentally induced disability, 3% of the population are really severely impacted, so not able to continue on with regular activities of going to a shopping mall or traveling in a plane, going to really highly populated areas because they're so debilitated by the radio frequency radiation and the electromagnetic fields they're exposed to, they would actually be impaired in that environment. So in Canada, that's 1 million people who are really severely affected. In the United States, it's 9.8 million. And in Brazil, if you use the population of 211, I think it's a little slightly higher now, you have 6.3 million people who are really dramatically impaired with in the presence of electromagnetic fields and frequencies. And there are so many people that have symptoms of the ones that I listed, whether it is pain or headaches or skin problems, and they don't realize that it's due to the electromagnetic exposure. They think it's something else. And as well, there are people that react with their blood going into Rouleau, but they have no idea that they're sensitive. So in their minds, they're asymptomatic, even though they don't realize that their blood is reacting that way. When we exposed peas to Wi-Fi for 30 days, it affected their shoot growth. So you can see here on the reference plants, the controls on the right grew much better than the Wi-Fi exposed plants on the left. And the roots were also severely impacted. The Wi-Fi exposed plants are on the left. There's literally no root growth whatsoever compared to the reference plant on the right. And the Wi-Fi router was actually located at the location of the red arrow. So you can see the Wi-Fi exposed plants literally grew away from the router. It was like they were trying to avoid the microwave radiation as opposed to the control. And you can see this, it's peer-reviewed publication available online. So another key issue facing those with EMS is housing. Where do they find safe, low EMF, MCS friendly, and mold free? MCS stands for multiple chemical sensitivity. So many people are also electromagnetically sensitive as well as they're sensitive to chemicals. So they have that environmental sensitivity. We would really love for many countries to maintain underserviced areas. So right now there's many areas that don't get good cell coverage. And so maintaining those and having no cell tower areas to provide people with choice and to provide a space for those who are severely impacted by these frequencies, a place to live. Currently, many people, in an attempt to avoid the electromagnetic frequencies and radiation, they're using mobile housing, so modular homes and trailers and tiny homes that can easily be moved if a cell tower is located next to them. They can just pick it up and move it. We really need emergency shelters. A lot of people, when they find out they're electrosensitive, they actually are homeless because they can't stay in their home, whether it's an antenna outside the building or something else, really high exposure that they can't remedy within their house. So they literally become homeless. And so it would be great to have low EMF shelters in which people could go and get medical help and food, etc. Because right now, when those people become homeless, there's so many complications with COVID because they would rely on camping grounds and different public facilities that aren't open right now because of COVID and because of the closures. They don't even have these access to showers, et cetera, that they desperately need when they're trying to reduce their exposure. Another key issue is finding medical help, finding a doctor who is EMS aware and able to accommodate them, not only to treat and diagnose, but they really need to accommodate. So I mean to eliminate their electromagnetic exposure in their offices, clinics, and hospitals in order to accommodate them. There's an international classification of diseases. So there's a code that is specific for EMS injury and EMS illness. So it's really important for those who have EMS to have a medical alert bracelet to share information on how exactly to accommodate you when you are in an ambulance or going to a hospital. And it's a disability. EMS has been recognized as a disability in Sweden, Canada, USA, and it's a functional impairment. It's the environment that is causing the disability. So it's an environmentally induced disability. And here in Ontario, we have legislation that needs to have a fully accessible Ontario by 2025. So we really need to create these low EMF areas in order to accommodate those with electromagnetic sensitivity. And it actually is a disability. It's an environmentally induced disability. And the disability is defined as a long-term impairment that interferes with everyday tasks. And they can experience adverse health effects from smart meters, cell phones, Wi-Fi, and low electromagnetic fields and frequencies like electric and magnetic fields as well. And right now, wireless radiation actually poses an access barrier to those who are disabled. So again, you don't really think about that, but free Wi-Fi in some of these public places actually poses an access barrier for people who are EMS. So many people ask me, can you recover? Can you recover from EHS or EMS? And my answer is always yes. I'm an eternal optimist, but I've seen so many people recover. And I really want to take the time to create like a recipe on how do you actually recover. And like I was saying, Dr. Havis and I have come up with an R-squared ID. So the first R stands for reducing your electrosmog exposure. The second R stands for resetting your limbic system, so addressing toxic thinking and emotional trauma. Boosting the immune system, so getting the immune system to work as well as possible. And then detoxing, and detoxing from chemical, biological, and electromagnetic. The immune system support and the detox should be supported by a physician who is aware and knowledgeable on exactly how to do this. And in this talk, I'll refer to the first two R's of which I help people with. So reducing your exposure is critical for people to be able to recover. So in order to reduce it, you have to first measure it. So you want to measure radio frequency radiation, dirty electricity, electric and magnetic fields, and the light noise and the flicker with blue light. So there are some handheld meters now that are quite readily available in order for you to measure your exposure and then minimize it. And you can get the help from a Building Biology Institute specialist. There are a number of people that are specializing in coming into your homes and helping you identify these frequencies. But I think it's really important for us to empower ourselves and get some of these handheld meters ourselves. And I do a lot of walking people through how to measure their homes when they get these handheld meters. And I encourage people to go together and share them. Because again, you don't necessarily need to monitor your home all the time, but it's nice to check it frequently. Many of the, these are some of the radiating devices. And what we've done is a colleague of Dr. Magda Havis has converted the sounds that the radio frequency meter makes when these different devices are turned on. And he's provided a PDF of the sounds that they make when they're turned on through the meter. So this is what Bluetooth sounds like through the RF meter. And this is a baby monitor. And this is Wi-Fi. This is a cordless telephone. Cell phone. And the mother's baby monitor. Some homes sound like this. It just gives you an idea of what it would sound like if we could actually hear it. So some people that are sensitive feel those different frequencies. So one thing that's really important is to connect your mobile devices to Ethernet. A lot of people don't realize that you can connect these mobile devices with wires. So you can put them into airplane mode and turn off the microwave radiation, eliminate it completely. And I have details on my website, theelectrosensitivesociety.com, on exactly how to do this. So what you want to do is you want to just Google how to connect your specific mobile device, your specific iPhone or iPad, and it tells you the different adapters that you need to connect it directly to Ethernet. So it's incredibly straightforward, and you can use iMessage, send and check emails, surf the internet, make audio calls through Skype and FaceTime and Zoom, et cetera. So it's an incredibly useful way to use your mobile devices without any microwave radiation whatsoever. The second R stands for resetting your limbic system. Many people, not necessarily as a result of the radio frequency themselves, but they're sometimes how they're treated. One thing that happens is people sometimes get stuck in a flight and fight component, and they have like almost like a post-traumatic stress response. And when your body is stuck in that flight or fight, it can't repair itself. The immune system doesn't function. And so you really need to do a dynamic retraining of that system. And the dynamic neural retraining by Annie Hopper and the Renew Aurora, Heal From Your Past, are two approaches that people with EHS have found useful. And particularly if anxiety is an issue, there are many people that these programs don't help. And it's mainly because anxiety isn't a component to their limbic system response. Another system that we have found that has been incredibly effective at eliminating trauma is the use of auricular chromotherapy. And Dr. Daniel Assis has developed this method of utilizing auricular chromotherapy in the treatment of psychological trauma, phobias, and panic disorders. And it's an amazing system where the earlobe, the limbic system is located, the pressure points on that earlobe with the amygdala and the hypothalamus. And it's also associated to memory. And so through this treatment of trauma, Dr. Assis asks a patient to remember a traumatic event, the absolute worst moment. And by doing that, it activates the limbic region of the brain. And so as a result, you'll find a tender zone on the earlobe highlighted in purple there. And so when you ask the person to find the trauma, that absolute worst moment that they can remember, you palpate the ear, you find the sensitive spot, and then you actually shine an LED light, just a very tiny little handheld light, I can show it to you afterwards, on this section of the ear. And what it does is it literally eliminates that image that you've brought up from the trauma. So essentially, it turns off the source of the trauma because you can't keep on seeing it to activate that response all the time. And it's really nothing short of miraculous. And you can have more information on Dr. Assis's website. And I also did a webinar with him at the EMF conference, and that video is actually going up next week on my website documenting exactly how to do this auricular chromotherapy. After you deal with some of the psychological traumas or any psychological traumas, there aren't always some, but if there are, you really want to then reduce your toxic thinking. You want to go from a limiting mindset to a very positive and empowered one, and I would say a more accurate one. I think we underestimate our own abilities and our own qualities sometimes. And three authors that I refer to about reducing the toxic thinking is, one is Dr. Brené Brown, and she just talks about, she's written this book about gifts of imperfections, and embracing our imperfections allows us to connect with each other more. She has a great approach. She uses humor. She has some TED Talks. She actually has a movie on Netflix. And she just really encourages people to feel enough, just to show up and be themselves and have the courage to do that. And it really allows us to connect and celebrate who we are. The second one is The Awakened Family, Dr. Shefali Tazbury. And often as parents, so our own parents, would have always given us helpful suggestions in doing things a certain way. And with those constant helpful suggestions, all they kept on doing to us as children is telling us that what we were doing wasn't quite enough. So sometimes those helpful suggestions were actually limiting us in ways. And just with that awareness through The Awakened Family and some of her other books, just really, really, really important. And the third one is that anxiety piece. And particularly even with COVID now, I've just seen anxiety go through the roof. And Nicola Bird, she's from the UK. She has an amazing approach to eliminating anxiety. And her approach is to do nothing. She literally uses the analogy of the snow globe. When you shake the snow globe, all those little white flakes and stuff are all of our anxious thoughts. And when we have an anxious thought, we feel like we have to do something right about it. So when you shake the snow globe and all our anxious thoughts start floating around, you tend to shake the snow globe more to do something more about it. To get the snow globe to stop and to get those little white flakes to stop, You actually have to hold the snow globe still. You have to do nothing. And so she encourages us that that nature of thought, that the anxious thought comes in, we don't have to do anything about it. Another analogy she makes is that an anxious thought is like a taxi cab. It just shows up without us ordering it. And it comes up and it wants us to get in. It wants us to get in that cab and go on that anxious thought trail. And you can just recognize it as an anxious thought, not get in the taxi cab, and just let it go. So literally, her approach to eliminating anxiety is to do nothing. And I cannot believe over and over again how powerful this approach is. Finally, also I'd like to look at a key issue of how to accommodate people with EHS or EMS in hospitals, schools, and public spaces. So recently I've been able to accommodate a patient in a hospital, a 67-year-old female, and she was accommodated for a 6-week stay in the hospital for cancer treatment. And to start this process, I went in through the patient experience office. So I contacted them saying that there was a patient that had some sensitivities and that needed to be accommodated. And they worked with me and we accommodated that woman fully with MCS and EHS. We measured and reduced the electromagnetic exposures in the hospital. It was really important that people didn't have any watches or Fitbits, anything radiating at all around the patient. We looked at the entrance, the admitting spaces, and the in-room patient rooms. We set up an RF blocking canopy and installed dirty electricity filters into the electrical outlets. We had like a little tin that people would use their put their radiating devices in outside of the hospital room. And then they would go in and do their treatments and assessments and then pick up their radiating devices out of the bin. We turned off Wi-Fi. We made sure nobody had any of their cell phones on. We turned off access points close to where the patient was going to be located. Communication was critical. Because the person was electromagnetically sensitive, they had reduced access to online. And so there was lots of phoning and lots of phone calls. And it was an amazing coordination effort from the hospital administration, from the IT department, from the maintenance department who actually installed the canopy. It was an amazing effort. And now those hospital administrators are working with me to make a little template for all hospitals to follow because they want to take this Ontario-wide and worldwide because people who are electromagnetically sensitive need to be able to access a hospital. And we were actually able to achieve levels of no concern within the hospital setting. So incredibly low radio frequency, dirty electricity, and electric and magnetic fields. So it was a real success story that we're going to build upon. And there are there's a document on how to accommodate somebody in a hospital setting on my website, theelectrosensitivesociety.com. And how do we do it in schools? We've been successful at hardwiring for internet access in many of the private schools, removing Wi-Fi, turning off the cell phones. We give the teacher this little safe and sound meter, and the teacher and the meter itself becomes the reminder for people to turn off their wireless devices. Rather than the student or the teacher, this little device makes sound, as you heard earlier in the PDF, so it becomes the reminder to accommodate rather than the verbal responses. And you have to do the entrances to schools. And we've been able to turn off or power down Wi-Fi routers to 16%, and they actually work better, and they still have full internet access. So again, really being aware of what's needed and just using the absolute minimum. And again, in public spaces, just like we would accommodate smoking or not smoking, having no Wi-Fi and cell phone free areas in libraries and health food stores. Libraries, CC Doucette has been able to get RF meters into libraries so you can actually loan them out or borrow them. And that's an amazing opportunity for everybody to embrace in all of our different communities. We've been successful at creating Wi-Fi free Wednesdays here in grocery stores in Ontario. And I'm working with hotels and restaurants to talk about that advantage that they can create for just a digital detox. A lot of people are just wanting to leave the cell phone at home. So helping them know how to do that and create no EMF zones within their facilities, and dentists and healthcare professionals, just how to accommodate somebody with EMS sensitivity. Often, many of the healthcare professionals and doctor's offices, once they've accommodated and wired their internet and turned off their cell phones and Wi-Fi, et cetera, they actually realize how much it might be impacting their health, and they feel so much better that they actually often stay wired. So how to accommodate it? It's really our duty as a community to provide accessible infrastructure. And like I was saying, in Ontario, we have to have a fully accessible Ontario for 2025. So really creating those cell tower free areas. In Peterborough, here at the city, we have an electromagnetic hypersensitivity tip sheet on how to accommodate somebody within a meeting environment. So at your workplace, if you have somebody who's sensitive, exactly what you do to host a meeting that they would be comfortable in. And again, it just involves using fiber optic cables, shielded Ethernet to connect to internet, and turning your cell phone off and eliminating Wi-Fi exposure. So again, there's a new website called Calm, a call to action to limit microcells. Really great website for resources on exactly how to help these communities connect and use wired fiber solutions the last mile, and creative where to put those antennas. So where to site those antennas, and working together using reinventing wires, the future of landlines and networks. So again, what I really want to do is identify that there's a need to accommodate those with EHS, and then provide communities with solutions on exactly how to do that. I think that providing solutions is a real key component to all of this. Advocacy in Canada, Frank Clegg is a former president of Microsoft Canada, and he's created Canadians for Safe Technology, amazing resource for Canadians. And he has the 5G appeal, an urgent appeal to the Canadian government to suspend 5G rollout and really choose safer, reliable fiber connections. So really there's an increased push to make a safer place for us. And advocacy in Canada, there's a number of groups that really are trying to educate on the impacts of wireless technology on our health. And this is my website, the Electrosensitive Society. And we offer weekly support groups meetings, and I help with advocacy and accommodation. So if you need help in educating your employers or your family or your hospital, I'm happy to do that. And I help with the remediation, reducing your exposure and finding medical help. So any of you that know people, doctors that are EMS aware, or an EMS, have diagnostic and treatment modalities, I'd really love to hear about it. So I think that's it. If there's any questions.
Thank you so much, Sheena. It was incredible. I love this part that you show the sound of each one. This is so important, like for schools, for children, for everyone. Because it's such an invisible thing, it's such a long-term thing also. It's not something that you enter in an EMF environment that you got a disease, so it's something that it's a long-term. So all these resources of didactic tools is so important. This one I just saw now, it's one of the best ones I ever seen, so thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It does. It makes it real. And like you're saying, most people don't have an immediate response. Like, it's not like touching an element and you get burned. It's cumulative, and it happens over time.
Yes. We need all these resources, like to make us hearable and also seeable. Like in the meter, you have the green, the yellow. So all these tools are very, very important.
Yep, and the safe and sound, it gives the numbers, the lights, and the sound is so important. And again, people want to know how they can educate, how they can, convince somebody or let people know. This does it for you, because the presence and absence, it makes it real. Like you're saying, it makes it visible, the invisible visible.
Yes.
I heard a really great analogy one time. One of the gentlemen, he was saying, if this was sewage and we weren't containing it on a wire and it was going all over the place, there would be a dramatic response to it. But because it's invisible and you can't see it, taste it, or smell it, it's everywhere, but we just kind of ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's like a thermometer, like you have your Celsius and Fahrenheit meters. So people can really see what's the temperature. So the meters are so important. I wish someday everybody has a meter in their home.
I used to always talk about, wouldn't it be neat if we put glasses on and you could see the different frequencies? They'd be all different colors and stuff. Because it's, again, you can just ignore it. Most people don't feel it, so you can just ignore it. But wouldn't it be amazing just to make it real, yeah, make the presence of it? You know?
Yeah, we should have an inventor in this world to create these glasses that you put, you see a white line or something every radiation. So maybe it would be a white in some places.
I see it like as a smog, right? Like literally like the different color would be the different frequencies, and it would just be like a thick smog, because that's really like, we call it electro smog, right? And we know that air pollution smog component, it's very similar. Yeah, you need to kind of utilize information that people are already familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's an amazing job that the people in Canada are doing about electrosmog. I'm fascinated with all the work, all the things you people have been doing. And it serves as an example for the whole world, right? I don't know if in other parts of the world they have similar initiatives like this. Maybe you could talk a little bit about this. And another thing I would like to know is, how does the weather interfere with the electro-hypersensibility?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With the hypersensitivity, I'm not sure about the weather. Again, it depends on the levels of exposure. It tends to be whether you're a high exposure or a low exposure. That's more indicative of what people are going to be sensitive to. There are many, many groups now working, particularly in North America in general, just trying to educate and advocate. There was the 5G summit in 2019, and we had the first medical conference in 2019, and then this most recent one, the EMF medical conference 2021. I really see that medical component as being critical, you know, because if you go to your doctor and you have all of these symptoms and they don't realize what it could be, you know, you often, people who are electrosensitive, they often don't realize it right away. It's a very long process of identifying. And if they were to reduce their exposure at the first instant, it would help them so much. So that medical component is critical. But there's a lot of people who are really well aware. You know, we have through C4ST and a number of different organizations, different groups, like, there is so much information online now. You can really educate yourself quite readily in different ways to really get up to speed. And there's a lot of people that are really speaking out about this. Like what I do is I give a little 10-minute presentation to city councils and town councils, and I do it through Zoom. So I can do it anywhere. I unfortunately have to do it in English, but I can do it anywhere. And I've done these different cities because, again, people have to be aware that this is a possibility, that people are sensitive in their communities. And then how do you accommodate them? So trying to help, like I said, I like to come with a solution. So they may not even realize that there are people that are sensitive. And then once they do, this is how you accommodate them. So I really see a movement in the right direction, both with an awareness and starting to be able to accommodate. Because I've worked with 6 hospitals here in Ontario now that have accommodated somebody with EMS sensitivity.
Hi, Sheena.
You're welcome.
Can you hear me well?
I can hear you, yes.
So thank you for doing that, for opening up spaces for people with EHS, because when you are in the stream of the symptoms, it's very hard to get anywhere. It's hard to get a dentist treatment. It's hard to get, you know, take your kids to school and stay in there. It's hard to go to the hospital if you have, because then you have the Wi-Fi routers right at the front desk when you're doing your registration. And that those are the areas where, the Wi-Fi emissions are higher, because that's where the Electronica room is located probably. So that's really amazing, that work you've done. And thank you for mentioning that this is not psychological, and this begins as a physiological symptom. And then, as Dr. Magda Havas mentioned last in her last presentation here, that it could cause, it definitely causes psychological consequences as well.
Well, when you're ostracized, not believed, ridiculed for feeling a certain way, like, you know, like there, that's what I'd like to avoid. I'd like to avoid people being discriminated against because they're environmentally induced insensitivity. One thing we do at the hospitals, we want them to ask the patient, do they have environmental sensitivities? The very first question. And then if it's yes, they're taken immediately to a low EMF area. So they don't have to sit and wait and do all of that stuff. You know how they do the COVID screening? We want to have the EHS screening and say, so then they're not sitting there through all of that toxic exposure only to make things worse. So it's creating those safe spaces in all hospitals that you need this right away. So it's normalizing that accommodation, like it should be happening. And once people realize that it needs to happen, it's just like putting in an elevator. You don't say, I really think you can walk up those steps. Like, I don't really think that you need that wheelchair. Like, I think that you could probably walk up, like the absurdity of that disability request. So it's normalizing that EHS is accommodated.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
But Sheena, in my case, I did not have nothing severe like Daniela had and other people. But I felt that my energy was being all drained up, and I could not find out what was going on. And I started doing acupuncture, and I felt much better. But then I started reading The Invisible Rainbow and looking up the internet, finding lots of information available. And then I just did a simple thing the first time. I just took off the cell phone from my bedroom. The other day I was another person. It's unbelievable. For me, it was like magic.
And you brought up two absolutely critical points there. One is getting that phone off, away from you, increasing your distance from it enormously. But the second thing is really creating that bedroom sanctuary. Really cleaning up your electromagnetic environment of your bedroom is critical, because then your body can deal with any of the stresses, any of the oxidative stress. It can repair and heal. But if you are exposed while you're sleeping and in that bedroom environment, you don't have that same restorative sleep. So that component of increasing your distance, getting that cell phone away from you, and really minimizing or eliminating the sleeping environment is critical. Yeah, that's great. And a lot of people just turning off Wi-Fi at night, they put it on a timer and it just goes off because you can't remember to turn off. Wire it and eliminate the Wi-Fi if you can. But if you absolutely can't do that, at least putting it on a timer, so again, you don't have that exposure while you're sleeping. Yeah.
Yeah, there's simple things that we can do, right? But people just don't know it. They just don't know they can do it. They just don't know what they are exposed to.
And I find too, like people that are already in the know that like they're eating well, they're exercising, they're really interested in their health and well-being. It's really a missing link for those people, that electromagnetic exposure. So I often start with them because, you know, they're eating organically, they're doing all the things they can to make themselves healthy. And it's inserting that information of the electromagnetic exposure, because it's actually really quite straightforward. Like, I can do it in a hospital, We can do it in our homes, really quite straightforward and easily. And there's tips to electromagnetic hygiene on my website at theelectrosensitivesociety.com. There's lots of really easy ways on how to minimize your exposure. Daniela, were you going to ask something?
Yes, I was looking for the mic button here. So I also would like to ask you about how could people identify their symptoms right away?
Mm-hmm. It's a really good question. I think what happens the most is that if you have different responses in different environments. So a lot of people will say, I went camping, and because I was away from the stress of my job, you know, because I was away from the city, I felt so much better. I slept. I couldn't believe how good I felt. I slept. Often it's the electromagnetic reduction and exposure that they're experiencing. And so when you feel different in different environments, that's a real key. The research that Dr. Magda Havas did, she looked at blood sugar levels, and in different environments, the blood sugar would change. In a high EMF environment, there was high blood sugar. In a low EMF environment, it would be low blood sugar. So these people had a terrible time trying to regulate their blood sugar. And she called it a type 3 diabetes, like an environmentally induced diabetes. So when they were exposed to EMF, they had high blood sugar. And when they weren't, they had low blood sugar. So again, it's that noticing if you're in a different environment. One of the questions that we love to ask, we ask people, do you like fluorescent lights? People who are sensitive, they do not like those lights. And it's trusting that instinct. I was measuring this woman's home with a light meter that gives flicker when there's a high flicker to it. There's a noise. It's a light noise detector. And she said, oh, I need you to measure these lights. And I said, do you like them? She goes, I hate them. They were the highest on the light noise detector. I said, take me to some of the lights that you like. So we took her to the lights that she really liked, and they were really, really low on the light noise detector. So ironically, we actually can feel a lot of this, but we're so divorced from trusting that gut instinct that a lot of people who are sensitive can really determine if they feel well in an environment or well exposing themselves to certain things and not if others. And there's really a push towards having some diagnostic tests. And again, it's that histamine, that antioxidant, it's that stress response. Like you have a stress response in the presence of electromagnetic fields and frequencies. Thinking of it like a toxin is really a lot easier. It's just easier to understand that EMF is a toxin. So when you are exposed to that, you're not going to feel well. And it's reducing that toxin at every possibility that you can. Yeah. So again, it's, and Dr. Rena Bray is one of the physicians here in Canada that diagnoses and treats. And she's come up with a preliminary diagnostic component that actually includes, you know, changing the environment and documenting what you see. Sometimes journaling, you know, documenting exactly how you feel, paying attention to that's going to be very, very helpful. And there's the Physicians for Safe Technology. I'm not sure if you're aware of that site. The MDs for Safe Tech is an incredible resource at diagnosing, treating, and that type of thing from a medical perspective.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I think we have there are some questions from people that are watching us.
Okay.
So let's take a look at what they're saying now. Here's one.
Okay.
Roberto Batista. How does it work in the law in Canada on this theme? Do you have any ideas around that?
Yeah, law isn't my specialty at all. But I know from the 5G summit that the medical doctors, because there's a possibility of injury with exposure to electromagnetic fields, because it's almost like an assault, if you use those terminologies of injury and assault, it stands up in a court of law much more readily than a sensitivity. And so I think that medical perspective and that medical participation in this process from doctors is critical in moving this forward in a legal sense.
Excellent. So is there another, let's see if there's another question. Here from Rafael Aroca. Could you recommend the studies comparing shielded and unshielded Ethernet cables radiation?
The shielded cables have a lower electric field, so it's better to have the shielded cables. But as far as a scientific study, I don't have one. But that's why I also recommend that people get a couple of meters. Like this one's for the electric and the magnetic field. This one's another one for the electric and the magnetic field. And then the radio frequency radiation and the dirty electricity. It's really important to do a couple of those little measurements of your environment, because you can see the presence or absence of it. You don't need to rely on the studies, because sometimes you can't actually get the exact same product that's being tested or utilized. And that's why it's so important to kind of empower yourself a little bit. These are really very easy to use. They give you a number and there's just a little button. There's not a lot of interpretation needed. And I literally encourage people to get these different meters, and I can Zoom with them online and show them how to measure their house and show them how to do things. So I do that. I do that a lot.
And with that, would you be able to move things around, like the electrical installations, or reduce the levels of dirty electricity and get your house more hygiene?
Absolutely. You can, there's a number of ways that you can do that. And like I was saying, there's tips to electromagnetic hygiene. Sometimes it's just increasing your distance from them. So you actually just have to be aware of where the hot spots are and make sure your bed's not located on one, or your favorite chair, or at your computer, making sure that you are far enough away from your computer. Like, you don't want to be able to touch your computer. Using the extended keyboard, so you increase your distance from your laptop, making sure it's all Ethernet cable wired. You can actually wire your mobile devices often right into your computer. And I have tips on my website how to do that. And then you make sure everything's turned off. The Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth are all off. And you can confirm some of that. Because some things with the meters, you don't want them to actually increase your anxiety. You don't want them to become, you know, increasing your anxiety, saying, oh no, I'm exposed to this, oh no, I'm exposed to this, and getting almost obsessive about measuring. But you do want to know what you're exposed to, and you can often reduce your exposure, because there's sometimes, you know, let's say a stove, the person was putting this right up next to the stove, and they're like, look at the reading, it's so, so high. And I said, yes, but your head isn't next to that stove for 8 hours or anything. So you want to spend time in your bedroom, at your bed, measuring exactly where you spend a whole lot of time and eliminating those exposures, because you can handle a little bit of the other exposures, but just really knowing what you're exposed to and then reducing it is really critical.
Thank you. And that's what's called the bedroom sanctuary, I guess.
That's right. And electromagnetic hygiene, like we talk about washing our hands and stuff, and that hygiene, you want electromagnetic hygiene. You want to lower it as much as possible.
Sheena, I have a question. I saw your last slide about all the network in Canada and a lot of groups that do advocacy. And advocacy is very little here in Brazil. It's growing very little. So I ask you how you guys are working with that, how you can help the groups with advocacy, and how you see the advocacy in Canada in this subject.
Mm-hmm. It's really been a long time. So, you know, we've been at this for 15 or 20 years. And Magda thought that it would take about 10 years to really get the information out there. And it's taken at least twice that, and we're still not where we need to be. So there is definitely a movement recently of, like, it just in the last couple of years, like, so many more people are informed. Just a silly example is that, you know, when I would go traveling or even walking around, you would see everybody with their cell phone like this. And now I almost always see people using it in speakerphone and a little bit away from their heads. So, like, just that little bit, that's an awareness piece, like, even if people don't even realize that. So it is moving in the right direction. And we can help each other. Like I was saying, I will present to any city council. I was saying, unfortunately, I have to do it in English, but I would do that in Brazil and educate people. It was interesting. I was interviewed in Vermont and they said, you know, where is the Electrosensitive Society located? And I said, well, I live in Canada, but I help people all over the world. And so she was so cute in her advert. She says, Sheena from the Worldwide Electrosensitive Society. And again, but I do, I help people in all different countries just to understand how people are sensitive, why they're sensitive, how they can recover, what's needed and to accommodate and move into that. So I really have focused on the electrosensitivity because if we accommodate them, we protect everybody else too. So ethically, we need to accommodate those who are really sensitive and we need to thank them. Because, you know, it's so easy to dismiss something if you're not sensitive to it. So let's say I was really sensitive to ice cream. I wouldn't be having the ice cream, you know, every day if I was really sensitive to it. So it forces us to reduce our exposure. So I see it really as a gift on so many levels, because if you weren't sensitive to it, you would just continue to expose yourself and you know, potentially suffer the health consequences of it. So, you know, I am an eternal optimist, so I think that might be coming through, but I do. I see it as a gift on some levels. Not when people are severely debilitated by any means or stretch of the imagination, but just to inform and reduce exposure.
So in this way, we can say that the EHS people are like pushing forward out the society to become more aware, protect itself.
It reminds me of the canary in the gold mine, right? You know, the canary.
Could you explain the canary? That's a really good study that the doctor did. I forgot his name now.
Yeah, so the canary in the gold mine. So they were responding earlier than people would. So when the canary died, you knew you had to get out of there. Like it's like that sensitivity. Like it's we are all sensitive. That's why it's called hypersensitivity. So we don't want to continue our exposure until everyone is sensitive. So we really need to be looking at people who are hypersensitive and them help us reduce our exposure. Like it really is a gift from them.
And do you think
that's very inspiring, Sheena? Thank you.
Oh, it's true. Sorry.
How do you see the press coverage to this subject, like the official press coverage in Canada? Because mm-hmm. I was like yesterday, I was reading some press coverage of this subject in Brazil of 5G and health in Portuguese. It's really, really poor and it's really, really. I don't know, make me sad to see like how the official press shows to the public this subject. How you see this in Canada?
Yes, we have seen that in Canada. When people are unaware of something or ignorant to something, they want to dismiss it. They want to say that it doesn't happen and it's not real and it doesn't exist. So it's quite a natural phenomenon to ridicule until you are educated of the risks and of the importance. And that's why the advocacy of accommodating those who are really sensitive, you get beyond all of that other stuff about having to convince everybody that there might be a problem. Like it's an environmentally induced disability that needs accommodation. So that's why it's been very effective at me being able to help lower exposures in many different settings, because it's just like accommodating for a peanut allergy or some other kind of sensitivity. So, and eventually enough people will realize that they are sensitive, because many people are sensitive right now, but they don't actually realize it's because of electromagnetic fields and frequencies. So once they make that connection, I think there'll be more and more opportunities. And there have been some very well-known people that are sensitive and that speak out against it, or not against it, but just inform. Like, I really think it comes down to education. And when people say, oh no, but they're just dismissing it, I'm like, because they don't realize, they're not educated. So I really do think it comes down to patiently educating over and over and over again. But you're right, the media coverage isn't where it needs to be.
Yeah, especially the biggest vehicles of media, like the main TV channels, the main internet portals, they have like the a coverage like, the science did not prove yet. There's the 5G seems to be safe and blah, blah, blah. And but in the real warnings and the real vehicles that show us more information about the smaller one, especially here in Brazil, I don't know. I think it's everywhere. Sadly, we don't have like big press vehicles that that shows more information updated about it.
Well, and there's a couple of media coverage that were quite effective in that, you know, in your cell phone, it tells you to keep it away from your body or else it exceeds guidelines, suggested guidelines exposure. So there, if you start to point out to people the factual information on what insurance companies are saying or what the manufacturers themselves are saying, the manufacturers themselves are saying to keep it away from your body. So it's how the information is presented. And I think it's so important to present scientifically accurate information because otherwise people can, you know, dismiss everything if everything is anecdotal or that. But there is enough science, the international scientific appeal. Like there are so many scientific documents indicating harm. And Magda has done a great job at presenting information on her website and in papers, just talking about, she did this, All Swans Are White. And you'll have to look at it. I can't remember the details of it. But the thesis that all swans are white is negated once you find one black swan. So those individual studies that indicate harm, it proves that it's not safe. So you don't need a whole bunch of ones to prove that it's harmful.
And there is no proof that it's not safe, right?
There is no proof that it's safe.
There's no proof of safety.
No, there's none.
Against the studies that are proving that the harms of it.
And Magda also talks about the weight of evidence. They always talk about the weight of evidence. So let's say you have evidence that there's really harmful effects. If you have the opposite weight, you would have a whole bunch of studies saying it's actually beneficial for you to be exposed. But what you have is you have those harmful papers saying that it's harm, and then you have ones in the middle with no effect. Well, the no effect doesn't have any weight to it. The no effect is no effect. So if you want to balance the weight of evidence, you'd have all those studies that say it's harmful. Where are all the studies that saying it's beneficial? So if it's just by chance that it's saying it's harmful, you should have by chance saying it's really beneficial. That body of literature doesn't exist. So that itself, when you're looking at the weight of evidence, so again, doubt is their product. The wireless industry, doubt is their product. It's, but when you know more about it and you take the deep dive into it, which a number of people are doing now, I think it's really only a matter of time for the layperson to be educated on this.
Yes, and doubt means that we have to be cautious. Right? We need caution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Oh. So there's one question here that I think it's very interesting for us because you helped me with that in Canada with the school. And she's asking if there is any education in the schools about the Wi-Fi in the schools.
I was able to get educating police officers because they come in and talk about safely using your cell phone from a a predator perspective or just as a child using the cell phones. And I educated him on the risks of wireless radiation. And so he was able to present that as a police officer to all of the students and all of the teachers in the public school system, saying that you really need to keep this off of your body. You need to put it in airplane mode at night. You need to text instead of talk. You know, just some very simple tips on reducing your exposure. There's a new website, Tech Safe Schools, I think it's called, techsafeschool.org. Amazing resource. It literally has just launched over the last couple of weeks. So if you're interested in anything to do with Wi-Fi in schools, that is the resource for you. And it's an organization, grassroots organization in the States, but it can be applied anywhere. We've had success at private schools because you're able to get in, educate them, discuss, and inform, and they're not tied to the bureaucracy of the public school systems the same way. So we've had much more success at eliminating Wi-Fi and wiring the technology for internet access in a private school.
Sheena, I have a question about the ICD-10, the International Classification Disease, and you said that Sweden had this own classification in 2000, and USA 2002, and Canada 2007. This international classification needs to be like ruled in every country.
It's an international classification, so it covers all countries. Those dates were specific to EHS being recognized as a disability. So in 2000 in Sweden, it was recognized as a functional impairment. So the environment impaired their function. In 2002, it was recognized as a disability in the United States. And in 2007, through the Canadian Rights Commission, recognized environmental sensitivities as a disability. So again, it's the combination of it being medically documented as a medical condition, and then the disability being you are functionally impaired, you're not able to function in the presence of electromagnetic fields. So those two things together provide the basis for the need, the absolute necessity of accommodation.
So maybe in our
be prior of that. Sorry.
In our work in Brazil with the doctors, maybe we can use this international classification to help the doctors to understand the symptoms.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what a number of people have asked me, I have this weekly support group for people who are EHS. They've asked for some kind of mechanism of discussion between doctors. And that's a really critical necessity that we would, you know, maybe once a month, getting all of the physicians worldwide, one, to learn about it and to share information on how to treat and move forward into helping those with EHS.
And Brazil could be part of it because Brazil is also a signatory of the Disability of Human Rights Act. So we should be, you know, it could be recognized as an impairment here as well.
Absolutely.
We just need to make the push.
And I was looking it up because I like to have as much stuff, you know, for the local who I'm presenting to. And I didn't have the easiest time looking up the disability information for Brazil, but I would be happy to help with that because in the States, they have MCS and EHS friendly housing supported by the government. And we are working on that in Canada as well. And that should be available worldwide, right? Low income housing for those who are environmentally sensitive. And that would include EHS.
And I also think you said the underserviced areas, like the state should provide, each country should provide for each citizens. I believe there's a very promising, very hopeful field in this subject of underserviced areas, because if a citizen have his or her own right to have an underserviced area, he's not obligated to be all the time, 24 hours, with EMF field. So I think it's something that I think in the next years, many people will win that if they prosecute the government, I don't know, to ask for these areas.
And I see it as a win-win, right? Like they don't have to spend the money to service it. And then if it's an underserviced area, it can be marketed and protected both biologically and human population for that. So I see it as a win-win. I think yes. They're reluctant to do that because then they might be admitting that there's a need for it. But when it's an accommodation piece, I think it's different. Rather than them saying, oh, you know, it causes cancer, or oh, it causes reproduction problems, it's more, if you take it on an accommodation piece, it takes out some of that resistance.
Yes, we will be more complex now after the satellite transmissions, other than antennas. With the antennas, it looks easier because you already have underserviced areas that are far away from cities. But when it starts the satellites thing, will be more complex, but it's very important also for the environment, for the animal life, for the vegetable life, insect. To have these underserviced areas like the bees. Like we are studying yeah. about the bees. Dr. Touze told us a lot of information about the bees and other animals that we don't know and vegetable life. So it's very important for humans and for other nature lives.
Absolutely.
Sheena, I see your background there. Are you in the Rose Lab?
I am.
Yes. I would like to know, how does it work? There are graduate students, and are there volunteers that work with you there? How does it, can you talk a little bit how it works?
Mm-hmm. Well, Magda was professor at Trent University. And so before she retired, we had the lab at the university. Right now with her retirement, it's more of an educational filming, that kind of thing. But historically, you know, she's done all sorts of different types of research, and you can see that on her websites through heart rate variability monitoring, pulse electromagnetic field therapies. Often we've gone to the individual chiropractors' offices and all that kind of thing, and making sure that they're a low EMF space, because that's the critical piece, right? When you're trying to look at the benefits for pulse electromagnetic field therapy, you don't want to have really high Wi-Fi environment and really high exposure. It's like you're trying to whisper to the cells to help them heal, only to be bombarded by the higher frequencies and stuff. But she has microscopes to do live blood analysis and that kind of thing. She has different diagnostic tools looking at, you know, circulation, brainwave activity, heart function, all that kind of stuff. So it was a mixture of looking at the impacts of the negative frequencies on health, as well as the healing frequencies to promote well-being.
Do you do any kind of outreach in the lab? We receive people
not so much, but you know, before Dr. Havas retired, definitely her research program was more active.
Yeah. Sheena, we are almost finishing our time, but I will thank you very much for your patience, your time. That video of that man with the heart team monitoring is very good. If you can provide us to maybe translate. It's a very short video, but it's very educational.
It puts a lot of information in it. Yeah, it's just freely available online. I'll send you the link.
Okay. And also the other one of the sounds, maybe if you can show the people, I think it's a very, very useful tool.
Yep, I will.
And these last couple minutes, I would ask you to tell a little bit about the project of the monitoring, the Bragg study, make the invitation to the people that are watching us.
Absolutely. So it's we're trying to monitor the radio frequency radiation in all of the cities worldwide. So any city or town that you live in, we're doing the main street of that city or town. And so it's globalemf.net is going to be the website that we put all of the information on. And you can sign up if you would like to measure and you haven't measured yet. We're all using the same meter, the Safe and Sound Pro 2. And that is available online as well. So all of the details are going to be on that website. And we're just looking at that citizen science. Nobody's really measuring radio frequency radiation. And it's really important to start documenting not only the really high exposure areas, but this would also be a way to find those low EMF areas that people desperately need worldwide. So I was really excited about it from the opposite side of things, you know, trying to find those really low EMF areas that people are so desperate to live in. And so again, nobody really knows what we're exposed to. And so just starting to educate ourselves and each other on the radio frequency radiation that we're currently exposed to, not only in our homes, but on the main streets where we travel and work.
Thank you very much. Sylvia and Daniela, would you like to have your last message to finish?
Okay, thank you so much, Sheena, for presenting all you know about the EMFs. It was very interesting. Your work is amazing, and everything that the Electrosensitivity Society has been doing is just great. It's what the world needs right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Sheena. I couldn't be more grateful. Here's my son, my younger. And so, yes, everything we did together, I'm so thankful for you and Magda, because that involved my kids as well in their school, that from one summer to the other, there were routers spread all across the schools and even inside their classrooms, and they were really close to the kids' heads. Even though it's classified by the World Health Organization as a class 2B carcinogenic. So that's an amazing work, and we are here to work in Brazil as well, and especially getting, you know, the professionals in the legal field more informed with regards to the installations and their licensing of the radio bases. And we need, you know, the way you have paved for us is just like amazing. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I look forward to working with you guys, because it's lovely for people to wake up to this. It's just great. And we were joking about saving the world one measurement at a time.
Yes. Thank you for inspiring us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Look forward to connecting more.
Okay. Bye-bye, okay. Folks.
Bye-bye. You're
Thank
welcome.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Take care.
You too.